Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to the Media Business Podcast, brought to you by Media Business Insight, the publisher of Screen International and Broadcast. I'm Chris Curtis, the editor-in-chief of Broadcast, and this month we're checking the health of the indie sector as we reveal the results of our 2019 Indie Survey. You're about to find out who the biggest indies in the country are, who's growing the fastest, and what trends will shape the next 12 months. We'll tell you the genres that are booming, those that are under threat, and who's winning the most business. Here's the editor of this year's Broadcast Indie Survey, Jesse Whittock, to explain more.
The Indie Survey is a broad look at the UK TV production sector based on responses we get from a survey we put out to the industry. And every year we get about 150 companies come back to us on that, and they provide financial data and views on the industry. And from that, we collate all the information, we package it up in a supplement which we publish, and then we reveal it on today here at the Indie Survey Reveal. And then that will publish online, and we'll use that data throughout the year to inform our reporting. The overall global turnover metric, which is the main metric we use to rank the indies in our table, has seen growth go from 2.5 billion last year to 2.8 billion. That's pretty significant, 12% up. We're putting a lot of that down to deals for the bigger indies. We think most of the market still remains quite flat, but that's not a bad thing in itself. And we've also seen, once again, the impact of the FANG, so Netflix, Amazon, Facebook and the likes, how they're impacting business and creating more opportunity. That's certainly come through. And there's also, this year, we've taken a big focus on the nations and regions with Channel 4 relocating and the BBC adding more money into those areas on a consistent basis. The upshot from that is people are excited by the opportunity but concerned about how things might shake out.
To consider the implications of this year's results, I sat down with four industry leaders to get their perspectives. Settle in for the inside track on the independent production business in the UK in 2019. State of the Nation. I'm going to do some quick introductions before we dive in. Immediately to my right, Susie Dark is a former Fox TV Studios Managing Director who became Chief Operating Officer at Naked Entertainment in 2016. She's previously held senior roles at Tiger Aspect, at Mentor, at Endemol, and as a COO is responsible for finance, legal and operations at Naked, which is backed by Fremantle. Naked shows include 100% Hotter and the forthcoming Ghost for Channel 4 and A&E Networks. Next to Susie, Camilla Lewis is Curve Media's joint CEO alongside the long-suffering Rob Carey. She worked previously at Talkback Thames and Cineflix before founding Curve in 2014. It produces broad factual programming such as ITV's Call the Cleaners, Quest's Salvage Hunters and the forthcoming BBC One title Vicky McClure, My Dementia Choir. And BBC Studios owns a 25% stake in Curve. Next along, Richard Johnston was appointed Chief Executive of Endemol Shine Group UK in 2015, having overseen the merger of Endemol and the Shine companies here in the UK. He spent the majority of his career at Endemol under its different guises. He's also chair of Screen Skills, the organisation formerly known as Creative Skillset. And finally, Sarah Gaiter is chief operating officer of All Three Media, a role that she took up in 2015 after the business was acquired by Liberty Global and Discovery. Prior to that, she was the boss of Fremantle Media UK, and her career also includes senior roles at Channel 4 and the BBC. She's also the chair of PACT, although she is wearing her All Three Media hat today for the purposes of this panel. Thank you all for joining us. Can we just set the scene? Can we kick things off? So I'm going to ask you that old perennial question. How's business? I wonder if you can give us a sense of what's driving growth, what the causes for optimism, what's a tougher nut to crack. Sarah, I'm going to come to you on the far end. How's business?
Well, number one is great. we've now obviously got the stress of staying there. That's the problem. Business is good. We are obviously the key driver for us is talent. It's talent that makes the world go round. It's talent that gets commissions. And also, you know, and we get that talent from various places. You know, we either do startup deals, we do acquisitions. So across the board, and we work across every genre. So we've got a very diversified business across every genre. So, you know, and we work with every platform, Netflix, Amazon, Channel 4, BBC, all of them. So that's where we're at.
Richard, I know in reality, All Three Media and ESG effectively are sort of neck and neck. What's your take? I mean, we saw one of the indie surveys suggesting that there are more buyers than ever before and fiercer competition than ever before.
The most pleasing thing from my perspective is how well we've done in non-scripted in the last couple of years. And, you know, that's been driven, you know, partly by UK growth, but also, you know, starting to see some international revenues from the new players. We're looking at now a bigger market.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had three or four buyers not very long ago, and now there's 10, 15 credible buyers. And, you know, that's got to be a good thing. The market has got bigger. How you access that bigger market probably is something you'll come on to later in the panel. But for me, that's the really good news.
We will do just that. Camilla Curve, a non-scripted company. You're not being left behind by all the high-flying drama executives. How's business for Curve?
I mean, it depends what day you're on. I mean, I'm grassroots pitching. I feel, you know, sore today because I didn't get a commission I thought I'd get. But yesterday I felt great because I was with a channel controller who loves something. So I don't know. I'm up and down every day. So I have a bizarre existence of constantly feeling like it's very, very difficult and it's not easy for anyone. But it feels a bit like the Wild West at the moment for me. I mean, I think it feels like there's more deals being done in different ways. And so we're working with some of the SVODs in ways that haven't been done before and with co-pros, which were new. So I think it feels like exciting times. And in simple terms, just looking at consumption, which you haven't talked about, it's more interesting to me. I mean, it's absolutely true, everything you said. It's brilliant, the results, by the way, and really interesting to see and sort of validation of what we all think. But the consumption of unscripted is on the growth. I mean, just particularly going back to what you were saying, I think that feels like a very exciting place for people like me at Curve.
Very good. And Susie, another non-scripted, you work for a non-scripted production company, winning commissions on both sides of the Atlantic. How's life at Naked?
It's okay. That's me being cautiously optimistic. It's not without its challenges. Every indie has its challenges. But this year, we're just beginning to see the benefit of our relationship with our distributor. Mm-hmm. And that's quite exciting to see some, you know, some international revenue coming in.
Naked's still a relatively young company.
Yeah, it's only 3 years. So I still say we're a small indie. I think we'll probably be small to medium this year. We're at a good point. I think we're doing a couple of new formats for BBC, and that's challenging, as new formats are. But, you know, it's going well.
Very good. Okay, so let's drill down a little bit on some of that. The survey suggests a growing sense of confidence among producers. There are clearly more buyers in the market, but what appears to be intensely fierce competition. So 74% of our respondents said competition was more intense this year than last year. So, you know, we're in the sort of the heat of a battle. Camilla, I'm going to come to you on this. You're out pitching to people. What about things like, I don't know, access to commissioners in terms of them being swamped by meetings? Or what about the idea that for every idea you're coming up with, your rivals are working just as hard? And do you have a sense of that competition is tougher than previously?
Yeah, Yes, but I actually think when you look at what's happening in the global market, any sensible broadcaster should be thinking quite carefully before they turn down any good indie and any good idea and any good meeting with someone, because actually there's a lot of places you can go to now for your ideas and your access or your talent or your formats. And I personally, I think it's always been hard. I think we always say it's harder. I don't think it feels any harder. I think there are more indies out there. I don't want to be resentful because some of them are brilliant and some of them are, you know, new and exciting. I think what feels to me is, I mean, getting meetings at my level. I've been pitching for 25 years, and if I can't get the meeting, I don't see them anymore. So I only see the people who want to see me, which I think is a very clear-cut way to working out who you want to work with, because otherwise you can spend a lot of time trying to get someone to love you who's never going to love you.
Before I come to Richard, I'll come to Susie on that. Naked has eased its way into the market. It's not as though all your initial commissions were all BBC One 9pm shows. I mean, you do a lot of work for the digital channels of Viacom, for example. Yeah.
But which is also good. I mean, that 100% Hotter has done really well.
It's been
So I don't think it's easy. I don't pitch. There's a reason why I don't pitch, because I would just say thanks. If I don't want it, I'd walk away. Simon and Tom can charm them.
Richard and Sarah, I'm going to come to you guys now. When a piece of talent... Sarah, you talked about talent, comes to you and says, I'd like to, I'm interested in starting my own label, as opposed to, say, taking a head of genre job at a big existing label. Does the volume of indies either in the market or in the All3 Media group impact what strategic decision you might take there?
Well, I think there are a lot of indies in the market at the moment. And, you know, we know that from the people we talk to. I think what we are finding, actually, is quite a lot of talent now want to join pre-existing companies. Having said that, we're also doing startups. I think it very much depends on the individual and what kind of person they are, because it's tough. You know, I mean, we're a big group, but we're 29 production companies of various sizes. And I think the important thing there is that, you know, when I sit and talk to them all, you do see the differences in the different sizes, and I think that happens over time. I think the other thing that you see is that in a competitive market, which actually has got to be a good thing, it's a good thing for the audience because it increases the opportunity of the types of programmes available. And also, I think that you have to kind of pitch more carefully. You've got to prepare more carefully. You've got to win that. You've got to win that pitch. And as Stephen Lambert often says, he's seeing more of the kind of Americanization of the development process, so that you go in with a piece of tape, which means you go in with an idea which is far more formed than it probably was previously. But the upside of that is it actually enables you to go out and pitch to more the same idea to lots of different businesses. So I see it as a huge opportunity, and I think it is an opportunity, but you've got to be very careful about how you do it.
Mm. Richard, I mean, similar position. ESG also has a lot of labels in the UK. Is it strategically important to add more labels? Is it more strategically sensible to put talent into existing businesses?
No, I think the more IP creators you have, the better. I don't think there's a limit to that. It's just got to make sense on an individual level. So there's not some grand master plan that says we only have 2 fat children, 3 drama companies or whatever it is. You know, we're entirely flexible on that.
And in terms of talent, let's talk a bit about that. How you attract the right talent, or how you keep hold of the right talent. I mean,
yeah, I do think, Sarah just alluded to it, I think there's been a little bit of a shift in the last couple of years of people being less looking to start up and to do the what you might call the traditional startup route. You know, we own all of it or nearly all of it, and we're going to try and build it up for 4 or 5 years and sell it. I think that's getting harder and harder to do. There's the challenges.
Because of the barriers to entry.
And also the barriers to growth. I mean, I think anyone, you know, you can set up an indie for sure and you may get a commission or two, but to build that into something of sufficient scale, because why do people do it ultimately? It's because they've seen people in the past make a great deal of money through building up an indie and selling it for, you know, 8x EBITDA or whatever they manage to get. We're seeing that very rarely these days. I don't think we've got the same dynamic anymore of companies like All3 Media, like Shine back in the day, like Shed, like ITV Studios more recently, who looked to sort of build up a UK sort of group. There isn't really the space to do that anymore. There aren't the companies to buy. So really, it's hard to see situations where you would go and do those, you know, hugely risky deals now, I think.
Okay, good. Sarah?
I think Richard's absolutely right. I think the other thing is that you don't actually have to own a company to make a reasonable amount of money either. You know, there are all kinds of deals that we can do, and in All3... I think we pride ourselves on the fact that actually we do bespoke deals. So, you know, what might make Camilla work you know, might be different from what Susie works, might be different from Richard and me. Mm-hmm. So we've all got different things that ultimately we want to achieve. Some people only ever want you to, if you are going to buy their company, take 25% of it or something like that, and then they'll leave it open forever. Other people want to know that you're going to buy the rest of the business over a period of time. Some people, as Richard says, like to have a salary and then get some upside from what they're doing. So you can do a variety of different types of deals. And I think one point, we haven't announced it yet, but and I'm not going to name any names here, but we have actually taken, there is a piece of talent in one of our companies who wanted to go and do their own thing. And so, you know, what we've done is set them up in a startup. Mm. And of course, we have an enormous advantage there because we know that this person is really good at what they do.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Kavita, I want to come to you. Richard talked about the challenges of growing your business, and earlier on in the conversation, you said it had taken a bit of time for the type of shows that you're pitching and commissions that you're winning to sort of develop a little bit. What would be your experience of that, kind of the growing pains of Curve over the 4 years, and where you're at now on that path?
I mean, we knew we were into a five-year deal. I think the mistake a lot of people make is they think that they're going to make a lot of money, which is exactly what you were saying, that it's going to be an easy sell thing and they're going to sell in 5 years' time, there's that amount of money coming. You know, if you haven't got a history of making programs and you haven't got the relationships primarily with the commissioners who know you've been around, know what you've done, then it's very hard. That's why for Simon to do well is not a surprise, to be honest with you. I mean, and he would have been a horse that most people would have backed because he was always around, he was good, he was talented, he's been involved with lots of programs. And I think those things really count. I mean, my experience is we said it was a 5-year sort of like vision initially, then a 10-year vision. And 5 years, we knew what that looked like. We are just over 3 years into that 5-year thought process, and we're where we sort of wanted to be in the sense that, I don't want to speak too soon because it's very painful. And I mean, I'm being on the front line. I mean, I feel acute pain, and where you have to pretend to be happy all the time, push people like me forward. You're right. People like me don't survive well if we haven't got an infrastructure around us of people who are really talented and support you in kind of like allowing you to see a creative vision. Equally, if you're totally not commercial, then as a creative, you're a bit useless because you start having ambition and promising things you can't deliver. Where I think it is now is I think you need a base. Get some really good commissions that are big returners. We've got a lot of returners. Of all the commissions we've got 20 shows in production right now at different stages of production. And I would say, I don't want to speak too soon, a lot of them are returners, and things like Called the Cleaners, you mentioned, you know, that series 2 had no press, it got 3 million on ITV1 up against EastEnders. I think that's pretty good. And I think if we can keep the consistency and the quality going, the trick is not to underdeliver. And when you talk about small indies, getting the first commission or the second commission, sometimes that can be the downfall of you because you then throw yourself into the making of it, you don't look after the indie. I mean, it's very hard to structure a company correctly. We started with a middle-sized ambition. We didn't start with, you know, we were more of a step up than a startup mm-hmm. in how we were quite unique in how we started. But like you, we didn't have the ambition to be small. We had the it wasn't a lifestyle indie. It's an indie that we want to grow, and that's why we called ourselves Media, with sort of ambitious taking over the world plans.
Very good. And Susie, I wonder if you can talk to us a little bit about, I'm interested in this idea that Naked, well, whether it was a strategic aim to sort of become known for a particular type of programme.
It does matter. And Simon's personality and Tom's personality comes out in our ideas, obviously. I think our programmes, if I make them bold, simple, we do stick with the kind of simple factual entertainment programmes. But as Camilla says, the hardest thing is when you get it's the new programmes, the new formats are the biggest challenge, especially where I'm sitting, and I know where Simon's sitting too, trying to make some money out of them, because you're under so much pressure to deliver a quality programme, and it's just your production piece has been chipped away at. That's a stressful place
to
be.
So one element from the indie survey, which you'll see later on, is that the slightly surprisingly, budgets appear to have edged up a little bit. Now I think, well,
I wonder whether
that might be through third-party money coming in S-Fod. and SVODs potentially. Certainly the indie survey shows that margins are going down and squeezed. So hard to make money on the first series of anything, really.
I think it's not. I think it's all what you said about, you know, you said now the sales are kicking in. I mean, if you're with a good distributor, and I think just time's shown us in the lessons we're learning about distribution mainly, which is that if you've got IP, I mean, just going back to when I was at Fremantle with Sarah, you know, Great British Railway Journals is still selling around the world, you know, and doing very well. We're happy about that, you know, and that was an idea that actually you couldn't see money in it, but actually you had money in it, but you had to stick in it for long enough. So sometimes ideas, you just have to keep making them, and actually it usually takes about 3 years before anything kicks in, really, in terms of proper money coming in.
Hence the importance of returners. What about Sarah and Richard? I'm going to ask the same question to both of you. One of your labels has the opportunity to have for a new commission, you know, they've got it over the line, and they come to you, and it will just about wash his face, this commission. The margin is wafer thin.
Well, I think the other thing that happens to us a lot is that the broadcasters turn around and go, to the companies, you're part of All Three Media, you can put some money in. We're finding that we're actually having to deficit finance a lot of shows now, which actually comes down to the importance of our distribution business, All Three International. Louise and her team take risks with our shows. The kind of programmes that we make now are attractive around the world. Now, I know you're going to come on and talk about, you know, the fangs, but actually, I think Netflix and Amazon have done an awful lot to make shows far more global in terms of what people are prepared to watch, which has got to be a really good thing. But the primary margin is definitely crunched up, and I think it changes the way and the kind of programmes you look at making. And what you start to do is to go, well, actually, what is the global element of this show? And how am I actually going to make money from it?
Sarah talked about it a little bit, but let's talk a little bit about some of the new customers, new opportunities, working with Netflix, Amazon, the rest of the fangs. So some figures, 33 indies out of 135 who responded to our survey had won some sort of original business from the fangs. So that isn't just Netflix and Amazon, because we are starting to see people win business with YouTube and Facebook and... who knows, Jay may actually unveil a slate in a couple of weeks' time. But 33 out of 135 winning business from the fangs. There were 21 last year in our survey, so that shows an obvious tick-up. Sarah, I'm guessing you would expect that to continue, that's something that's here to stay.
I think the other thing is you look at how the fangs are treating the UK market, which is that they've all now got offices here. You know, they've got heads of scripted, heads of non-scripted. It's a really interesting process, I think. They know the creative talent. We've got enormous creative talent in this country, and they know that. They know we can make great shows. And so they come into this market. You know, when you look at how the numbers break down, they're often fully financing shows as well. I know they buy all rights, but, you know, they give you a premium against all rights. They're doing more non-scripted. You know, we've got The Circle now, which has been started on Channel 4, has been picked up by Netflix. A bit of a tip, actually, anyone who's making for Netflix or Amazon has got a format, make sure you're the production company that's tied to making it in the other countries, because that's where the benefit comes, because otherwise they go and give it to somebody else. And I think that, you know, that's good news for us. But one thing I would say about the SVOD market is it's about to increase. So you've got Disney Plus coming into the market, you've got Warner Brothers about to launch theirs. You've got, there's another one, isn't there? I can't remember who it is at the moment, but Apple, of course, and then BritBox. So I think this time next year, we will be looking at a very different market. And I think we'll be looking at a market of the battle of the SVODs. And it'll be interesting to see then how much money they're paying, what rights positions they're going for, and everything else. So that will be fascinating. And the brilliant thing about this business is it constantly changes.
And Richard, you'd said that ancillary is where you make revenues. I guess if you're dealing with profits indeed. If you're dealing with an SVOD, that's a different experience.
Yes, the model with the SVOD, if you can get it, is that they pay you a massive premium for buying out your ancillary.
So how similar or different is that to the old work for hire for the US networks? I mean, it strikes me as that's not a million miles away.
It's not a million miles away if they'll pay you the additional margin. So if you're making a 40% margin on a show, you're probably willing to give up your ancillary or most of it. And the UK model, obviously, you wouldn't expect to make that sort of level of margin, but you keep the ancillary. Which is better? I think everything is good is probably the simple answer. You're very happy to have all of it. But what you don't want to do is be doing programs for 15%, 18% margin and not keeping the ancillary. Mm. That's where the danger lies.
Camilla, I wonder, in Curve's master plan, so I spoke to not quite a direct contemporary of yours, but an entertainment indie boss the other day, and I asked about Netflix, and said, "Oh, is Netflix top of the hit list? If you could win a Netflix commission, would that be your number one target?" And she said to me, "My backers would probably like that, and it would probably look good reputationally. But actually, what I'd really like is a 9 o'clock show on Channel 4 or ITV, actually, with entertainment. You know, that I could then own the rights to and sell around the world." So where are you on that spectrum? To what extent would a Netflix commission be more valuable to you, do you think, on different levels than a...
Well, they've all got value in different ways, but I'm not being glib about it, I'll answer that. But retrospectively, as I was trying to say, you can redefine what your company is by the commissions you've got. But the truth is, you don't know what your company is going to be known as until you actually win those commissions, unless you're a very rarefied producer who's only doing, you know, one-off docs about specific subjects. Generally, if you're trying to be across the spectrum, you become the company that makes 100% hotter, but there's 10 other ideas Simon will have wanted to make that didn't happen. So in terms of what we want to be, I know where we want to sit ultimately. I'd like both. I mean, I want Netflix and I want Channel 4, but for different reasons. I think the SVODs in the future and the kind of Wild West that's happening, as I said before, where there's lots of opportunities to co-pro, means ancillary rights might open up a bit, or more money might come to the market. I don't feel that budget increase, but I'm pleased that people do, amazed. I think it feels like you've got to be very flexible. And I think going back to what Dream Commission is, I think for me, I want more 9 o'clock shows on terrestrial channels in the UK because you get rights. And because I'm a baby, I want my mum to watch it and say, well done, you did all right. And actually, often she won't necessarily tune into some of the more obscure SVODs, even if they pay lots of money. I mean, but equally, you know, Netflix is of course a huge goal, but they know that, and they're much more business savvy than the UK broadcasters in many ways, that all the SVODs are. They know that they're coming into a market where initially they were a bit sceptical to come and play. They weren't that keen. They're a bit full of themselves in America. Then they realised, oh, Europe, in England particularly, was an exciting Britain. It was an interesting, yeah. Thank you, got there eventually, was an interesting place to play. And I think they are investing very heavily, and they're investing emotionally very heavily in relationships in the UK. So they are flirting with us. They are inviting us to things. They want us as an indie, and I'm sure this is how most of you feel. They're actively seeking us, as opposed to there's still an attitude, certainly at things like organisations like the BBC, where you should be grateful if you're working with them. That's certainly not the case across the SVOD, and I speak honestly about the BBC, with love.
Very good. Susie, from Naked's point of view, strategically, where do the new customers sit in the mix?
I think we'd like a bit of everything. Is that greedy? I think if you could have a bit of America, Netflix or Amazon or Facebook, and then the terrestrial, the strategy is to spread the love evenly if we can and try and get those commissions.
Is that strategy an overt one? In the sense of, I mean, do you sit around at Naked and think, OK, it's really important that we get into this space, we win a commission from one of these new emerging customers, so we're going to put extra focus on that? Or is it more organic than that?
You have to ask Simon, that's his area of expertise. But
I'd say we've overtly said we want Netflix. Okay. And he will have an overtly a view, but that will allow you to inform your other demands. Because if you're saying Netflix, what you said about tape and about Stephen saying about tape is true across the board. And the SVODs have led the way.
Camilla, you mentioned tape there. I wanted to ask you guys, a sense that I get from talking to indies is they're expected, always increasingly expected, to put more and more of their own money or their backers' money into sizzles, into longer tasters, into pilots. Is that just par for the course now?
When you look at broadcasters and they say to them, you know, they're contributing 5,000 to a non-scripted idea. To be honest, you're better off, if you can afford it, not to take it, because you tie the rights up. Whereas if you don't take it and you keep the rights to yourself and you're making the sizzle and you're investing in it, then actually you can go and sell it to whoever. I think the other thing is that, you know, you look at the PAC surveys that happen and the amount of, I mean, you look at the money that the indies are contributing to development now, it's huge. And it's an investment into the production, because we still don't get the money that we invest in the development of a show back from the broadcast budget. So it's a cost of business, effectively. And it's one that we all have on our numbers, and it, but it's a really important cost of business, because if you do not do a development properly, and what I'm noticing is when I see the sizzles for places like Netflix and Amazon, I don't know whether it's because people are trying to sell a global show, but they're bigger, and there's something about it that makes it look bigger and makes it look really impressive. And I think from a commissioning editor's point of view, you can see what you're buying.
You can find, you know, young graduates, young people, you know, straight out of school even, who can cut these amazing sizzles, and it doesn't have to cost thousands and thousands of pounds. If you know, so it's definitely worth something worth researching if you're not doing that.
I could totally agree with you, and that is our strategy, and I'm sure yours too. But I think there's a controller who we saw yesterday for a brainstorm with our team, Channel Control in the UK, and categorically said, "I hate tape. I don't want anything on tape." And it's like, oh, okay, we've made you three tapes, but that's fine. We don't care about that.
That's unusual, though.
That is unusual, but it's still
feel
a
like more
still,
and more
still
people want
someone
tape.
We're making two series with, who we want to make more with. So you have to. I mean, you're right. It is tape, but equally,
they've got to
believe.
Like
they've also, they also got to believe in you. The tape will sell something. I think all of them are obsessed by quality, and I think the Netflixization of everything, if that's a new word, but everything being bigger and got. I mean, definitely on sort of like the main channels in the UK, there's a desire to make everything bigger, brighter, more glitzy, more factual entertainment.
It feels like for a long time, obviously now, it's been everyone's accepted that traditional UK broadcasters are not going to fully fund drama. Too expensive. That's moving now into non-scripted. Richard, with one of your indies wins a commission, 8 p.m. commission for a, or 9 p.m. commission for a PSB. Would your gut instinct be that that business would be fully funding that commission or close to it still for in factual entertainment?
It depends how expensive the show is, I think. Race Around the World, for instance, which I'm guessing has had some sort of debt, because obviously very looks like a great show, by the way, but absolutely amazing, but also I expect quite expensive and probably be higher than the tariff. So you get shows like that where you sort of have a discussion and you expect that the broadcaster is going to ask you, because this is a show that may travel around the world, to step in. However, there's other shows that, you know, there's quite clear tariff.
Susie, from your experience in that, in terms of working for Naked?
We still expect the broadcasters to fully fund, but I'm finding that the budgets just, they aren't increasing, and it's getting harder and harder to try and, you know, make it for the money. But once, as soon as you sign the contract and you're in production, you think, oh, it's very exciting, and then the pressure is on, and they just want a little bit more, just a little bit more, in the nicest possible way. And of course, we want to deliver quality and give them what they need, and then you have the viewings, and then suddenly it's a second viewing, third viewing, and then...
It's not always outside money that's coming in as such. It's people contributing their margin, which is why on first series, you know, you basically throw quite a lot at it in order to get the second series commissioned.
But don't you think the broadcasters are now much more up to speed on IP, certainly at the commercial broadcasters, and they're just much more aware that you're going to make money out of the show. And
well,
they sometimes have an incredibly inflated sense of what you're going to make and how quickly you're going to make it. So it's like, oh, well, we'll just give you that. So a recent show which we've just taken, I won't say which broadcast, we've just done a deal on, you know their view was, you know, oh, you're going to make millions out of that. Well, you know, maybe. I mean, maybe in 4 years, if it's a hit and it sort of works, you know, and maybe we won't. But right now, we how do we finance that?
Absolutely.
There's a lot of anonymous quotes that come with the indie survey when we ask people various questions. There was a nice quote that came through that said it was about indies and launching indies, and the quote was, "Every commissioner or controller who leaves a channel sets up an indie dreaming of riches."
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
None of us speak
commissioners. Usually wrong.
Yeah. Can we talk quickly about some genres? There's a lot's been said about the drama boom. I don't want to focus on it too much here, but I don't think that's to suggest that it's abating in any way. It feels like this is still, for you two guys, I guess the growth prospects for all three and for ESG are inextricably linked to drama. Is that fair?
You know, as I said earlier, I think our non-scripted is absolutely key focus for us and has done really well in the last couple of years. But yes, scripted, I think, is obviously a big opportunity, but it's also insanely competitive. You think non-scripted is competitive. you know, the war for talent in particular. On
writing talent.
Writing talent, production talent, development talent, acting talent, all of it is and what we've seen is just the inflation of costs in that. And it takes, you know, way beyond what's happened in non-scripted. So actually, it's a genre that, yes, is great, but you need to invest ever more in. I think it's becoming increasingly the preserve of you know, bigger and bigger companies as a result, because it's so hard now to get a big drama up. But, you know, how much of a risk do you take? You can be taking seven-figure bets on these things. One of the dramas we did last year, you know, ESI put in 15 million deficit finance. We got it back, thank God. But those are sort of gambles that people are taking now, and they're obviously they're way beyond the most companies.
We've done very well in drama. So, I mean, I know Two Brothers have been mentioned. And, you know, we've had shows like Baptiste and Cheat. Cool Midwife does incredibly well. So drama, I think, is a really good genre. I think where I might disagree slightly with Richard is on saying that it's just big indies that can do drama. I think it actually is down to the distribution business. So I think small indies can do drama, but they need to go to a distributor to work with, because it's inevitably the distributor that puts up the deficit on that drama. So, but actually you can get great returns on drama, I think. Where I'm particularly envious, I think, of Richard and Endemol Shine is their stable of formats. That's the other thing, which is brilliant. So it's not just drama, it's also about getting global formats off the ground. And if you can get a global format off the ground, then obviously you make money while you sleep, which is brilliant. So I think there's still lots and lots of opportunity.
Good. And what about factual? I wanted to talk a little bit about factual. The survey suggests that factual is growing quite nicely. And I wonder about opportunities there. It feels, Camilla used the term Netflixification or something like that. But sort of high-end prestige, we've still seen it in true crime, obviously, but this sort of high-end docs. And actually, Channel 4's had good rating success recently with things like Neverland and Three Identical Strangers. Sort of prestige factual coming through?
It's definitely a genre that's growing. I think commercially it's quite a difficult one because of the one-off nature of them. So mm-hmm. they're great to have, great prestige, and you probably make quite a good sales out of them. I'd say commercially, you know, they're probably not the main target for a lot of companies. You'd much rather have a 24 Hours in A&E or a Gogglebox or a MasterChef.
We are running towards the end of the session. I want to talk a little bit about the international sector. We've talked about FANGs and what have you, about the strategic and commercial importance of international business. So, Camilla, I don't know. You'll probably tell me I'm wrong. You regularly do.
You don't listen to me.
I think I do, occasionally. I think you know, I think of Curve as a relatively domestic business. How important is it? Is the, you know, international customers and the international world to Curve?
Well, the international world is important. As I said, Netflix is a top priority for Curve. I'm quite happy to say that. And actually, it's helping us because of my Netflixification of stuff. It means that it makes your ideas a certain way. And a lot of the channels are talking about wanting things, you know, against Netflix. Netflix has scared a lot of the broadcasters. So thinking about it matters. But equally, I go
you mean
back,
sort of fact-end of scale, is that what you mean?
Fact-end of scale, I mean scale, because they all want scale. Bit from the BBC, ITV, Channel 4, we'll all say, and Channel 5, we'll all say scale in different ways, I mean, in sort of a different note. I mean, I think for us, I think we feel UK broadcasters are still, we're still in a small window where they still have spending power and there is still IP. And while there is still IP and spending power, we're going to focus on the UK. We love the UK and we want to be here. But equally, we are open to being everywhere. When we pitch, we're in development and with various different international broadcasters. But that and we see that as a future and alongside our present plans. But wide, going back to what you said, the trick is being, and everyone said it, is being diverse, not having two commissioners who like you at the channels. Often those channel controllers or commissioners who leave will say, it's great, my best friend's the head of this there and the head of that there. You know, that's not enough. You need a range of people because you can be in and out of favour with channels and broadcasters.
Susie, from Naked Entertainment's point of view, that feels like quite a transatlantic business.
We're lucky in that respect. So we're doing a production for A&E at the moment. Simon's always pitching in the States and the UK at the same time. So
is that a fairly even sort of split in terms of revenues, the amount of business in the States and in the UK, or how does it?
Yes, it's pretty even, but it can change.
Of course.
On a dime. So, yes, at the moment it's pretty even. And we haven't got an office in LA, but, you know, we have productions running out there.
There's a good quote in the survey, which is an on-the-record and attributed quote. So Grant Mansfield at Plimsoll in Bristol, they've had a good year. Plimsoll in natural history, which has seemed for quite a long time not really the preserve of the indie sector, but now a growth opportunity. And there's a quote in the survey where he talks about, he says, getting on a plane to the US, we're doing that as often as we're getting on a train to London these days. You can understand that experience?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely the same. I think a lot of our, you know, we've got offices in LA and in New York, and have had companies over there for a long time now. Shows like Undercover Boss have been going on for years. You know, when Pat Llewellyn was running Optimum, they've got a company in New York, so, and the same with Lion. So those companies have worked transatlantically at any rate for a long time. We've also got offices in Holland and in New Zealand. So we do work internationally, and sometimes we create shows in those territories and sometimes we sell to those territories. So, and we sell it all over the world. So I think it varies, but we very much see ourselves as an international business.
Thanks to our panellists for their time and expertise, and thanks to you for listening. Remember, you can catch up with all episodes of the Media Business Podcast at broadcastnow.co.uk, screendaily.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's all for now. Don't forget to subscribe for our next episode as soon as it's released. The producer is Rebecca Grisdale-Sherry, and the Media Business Podcast is a PPM production.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, on Monday, it's the anniversary of the table knife being invented.
On Tuesday, we explain how the tradition of the two-minute silence originated in Cape Town.
On Wednesday, we recall the day King George III proved he was assassin-proof.
On Thursday, let's all eat cake. It's Marie Antoinette's wedding.
And on Friday, we discover how Buffalo Bill helped invent the Wild West.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the Retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.